Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest this week grew up in Oceanside, Long Island, New York, and earned a bachelor's degree from Union College, his medical degree from New York University Medical School, and specialty training from Johns Hopkins University. He served for 20 years, during which he was chairman of the Radiation Oncology Department at Wayne State University's School of Medicine. In 2016, he was diagnosed with myelofibrosis, a fatal bone marrow cancer, and is now a proud cancer survivor. His name, Dr. Jeffrey Foreman. And I'm Jack Rasul, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Rasul, and this is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to Jeffrey Foreman, Dr. Jeffrey Foreman, the noted oncologist for the Karmanos Cancer Institute. Doctor, welcome. A real honor to have you.
Thank you, Jack. It's a pleasure to be here.
First question, how are you doing?
Thank God I'm doing extremely well. You know, I have passed the 3-year point since my bone marrow transplant. I am still in remission and hopefully completely cured.
All right. Let's go back to your childhood. Talk about your childhood and your mom and your dad, please.
The way I picture my childhood, and at least describe it to people, is that it was a bit like the TV show The Wonder Years, that I grew up on Long Island in a subdivision where everyone moved into the neighborhood at the same time. On my block of 24 houses, I had 24 friends, and my childhood, based on all of my recollections, was just one happy day leading to the next. My parents, who both were born and raised in Brooklyn, New York, moved to Long Island when they had me, their second child, and outgrew their apartment. And they were hardworking people. My dad was in the soda pop bottling business. My mom was a stay-at-home mom until the soda pop bottling business went bankrupt. And then they opened a personnel company, very much like Kelly Girl or Manpower. And my mom went to work at that point and worked until they retired.
What's the biggest thing, Jeff, you learned from mom? And what's the biggest thing you learned from dad?
I think from my mother, the biggest thing I learned was really the benefit of hard work and the importance of real stick-to-itiveness. From my dad, I learned the importance of patience and kind of speaking softly and carrying a big stick, because he was a very patient, quiet man. But when he spoke, people listened.
How was it you decided to become a doctor?
And growing up, I actually had dreams of playing in the NBA. And those dreams were...
Well, you were a dreamer.
Yeah. Those dreams were dashed relatively early. And I didn't have any physicians in my immediate family, and so I think it was really based on watching TV shows like Marcus Welby and my own personal experience with my pediatrician. But from a very early age, I always wanted to be a doctor without really even knowing or understanding what that entailed.
You went to Union College, then you went to New York University Medical School, then you went to this place called Johns Hopkins University. Dr. Ben Carson, it's got an aura about itself. Why is it so special?
I think one of the things that makes Hopkins such a unique place is not only its history, that, you know, most of the great medical minds surgically and in medicine, like William Halstead and W.W. Scott and William Osler, all of the real greats at the late 19th and early 20th century were a product of the Hopkins environment. But even today, I mean, they have such great depth and breadth of talent and knowledge, that if you need to know something, there's always someone there who either is an expert in that field or knows the experts in that field. And it's just a remarkable place with a great culture, and it was a wonderful place to train. And it was there that I became interested in what became my life's work, which was, you know, clinical work and research in prostate cancer.
Why did you specialize in radiation oncology? How did that ever come about?
Becoming a radiation oncologist actually came about by mistake. I had signed up in medical school to do an elective in oncology, meaning medical oncology, which is the specialty that treats patients with chemotherapy to treat cancers. And on the first day of that elective, when I showed up, I was in radiation oncology by mistake. And so I went to the dean's office feeling kind of irate, saying they made a mistake and I needed them to correct it. And they said, sorry, that elective is full. You have to do radiation oncology. So I really had no choice. And so I did I think it was a six-week elective in radiation oncology, a field I had never heard of and really knew nothing at all about. But the professors who I worked with at NYU were were fantastic physicians and clinicians and even better teachers and mentors. And they really turned me on to the specialty of radiation oncology as it existed back then in the late 1970s. And we were just at the cusp of where computers were beginning to make a big impact on medicine and especially radiation oncology. And with my background in math and physics, it actually seemed like the perfect field for me. And so although I didn't want to do the rotation, I ended up loving it and chose it to be the career that I followed for the next 35 years.
Speaking of never heard of and knew nothing about, how was it you ever got to Detroit?
I actually did not know much about Detroit. And I was so either naive or ignorant that when people would talk about Motown music, I didn't connect Motown with Detroit. I mean, I had never heard of the Motor City. But the work I was doing after I finished my fellowship, so I began this research at Hopkins, and then my first job after fellowship, I worked at Memorial Sloan Kettering, which is a cancer center in New York. And I became involved in a new field called computer-aided design and delivery of radiation treatment. And I think in part because of my background and in part being in the right place at the right time with some extremely smart people, I became one of the pioneers in that field in the mid-1980s. And it was really based on the work that I had done in three-dimensional treatment planning and delivery of radiation that attracted me to the University of Michigan's Department of Radiation Oncology, because at Sloan Kettering, we were doing this as a research project. The University of Michigan had enough foresight that they wanted to make three-dimensional treatment planning and computer-aided delivery of radiation the standard for all their patients. And so they recruited me to come to Michigan in order to help with their 3D treatment planning program.
And you learned about the Wolverines.
And I learned about the Wolverines.
We're talking to Dr. Jeffrey Foreman, and I'm Jack Rasulin, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. This is Anything Is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Rasulin, and we're with Dr. Jeffrey Foreman. From 1988 to 1991, he was a professor at the University of Michigan Medical School. Doctor, talk to us about that chapter of your life.
My years at the University of Michigan were very exciting. We really built on the work in three-dimensional treatment planning. I was able to build my clinical practice, and I really split my clinical practice between the Ann Arbor and Southfield because Providence Hospital had become a satellite for radiation oncology only of the University of Michigan. And so I got to see kind of the best of both worlds, the academic world when I was in Ann Arbor, being able to do research and teaching, and the private practice world when I was in Southfield. And I enjoyed them both very much.
Let's pretend Bo Schembechler is here. And he says, Doctor, let's get down to the basics. What is cancer?
So cancer is a disease that's characterized by the unlimited growth of malignant cells. So they're cells that have undergone some type of mutation, and that mutation prevents them from stopping their growth. So two things happen with cancers. One is the normal controls on our body that prevent tissues from just continually growing throughout our lifetimes. You know, our feet don't continuously get bigger. Our noses and, you know, ears don't get bigger throughout our lifetimes. But cancers continuously grow because they lose that feedback mechanism that allows them to stop growing. The second thing about cancer that separates it from benign tumors, which can also grow in an unexpected way, is cancers have the ability to break away from where they start and spread to other parts of the body. And it's really that kind of spread, which is called metastases, that is what makes cancer such a dangerous and potentially fatal disease.
50 years ago, we didn't hear about cancer. We sure didn't hear about a 25-year-old woman with breast cancer or a 10-year-old kid with bone cancer. Why so much today?
Actually, the incidence, you know, the frequency with which many of these cancers occur has not changed that much in the last 50 years. So some cancers have become more common. So lung cancer in women, for example, became much more common because after World War II, many more women began to smoke. And because of the association between smoking and the development of lung cancer, women unfortunately caught up, and lung cancer is now the number one killer of women in this country, where previously it had been breast cancer. But culturally, the norms 50 years ago were that people just tended not to talk about it. So that I had relatives in my own family who were diagnosed and treated for cancer that I didn't even know about because no one in the family would talk about it.
All right, let's jump to 1992 when you joined Karmanos Cancer Institute. How and why?
So I ended up at Karmanos and Wayne State University back then for the same reasons that I ended up at the University of Michigan. Because of the research I had done on computer-aided design and delivery of radiation, the chairman of the department at Karmanos, so Dr. Arthur Porter, felt that that area of science would really be applicable to a machine that they had built, which was the only superconducting cyclotron producing medical neutrons in the world. So in the U.S. at that time, there were only three radiation machines that made particulate radiation and used the particles of neutrons. Currently, there are dozens of machines in the country using protons. And for those who remember back to their high school physics or chemistry, in the nucleus of every atom, there are some number of protons and some usually equal number of neutrons. So the cyclotron is able to split apart the atom and create either a pure beam of protons or neutrons. The machine that they had at Karmanos was a neutron machine, which has great biological advantages in terms of treating cancers. So for some cancers, like prostate cancer, which was the main area of my research with the neutron machine, the radiation with neutrons is four times more effective at killing the cancer than standard radiation. And so one of the problems is that it was very potentially damaging. And so tying the physics knowledge of careful aim and delivery of the radiation with the biological advantages of the neutrons seemed like a logical next step. So they opened the neutron-producing cyclotron in October of 1991, and later that month I began work at Karmanos.
We hear all of these stories about the Ilitch family and what they've done for Detroit. Dan Gilbert, tell us about Peter Karmanos.
Well, Peter Karmanos has done a tremendous amount for Detroit. And without going into all of what he accomplished by moving CompuWare to the city and really beginning the resurrection and renaissance of the Midtown area, I think his biggest contribution has really been in helping to support and develop the cancer center that now bears his first wife's and late wife's name, Barbara Ann. So Mr. Karmanos, by initially making a very significant gift, allowed for the development of a modern, state-of-the-art cancer institute, which now, 25 years later, is the only freestanding cancer hospital in the state of Michigan, which is largely attributable to him, has a huge nationally recognized research program that invests $100 million a year in cancer research. And one out of every three cancer patients in the state of Michigan is treated at a Karmanos facility. So the contribution monetarily was large, but the contribution in terms of how it's impacted on the people in the state of Michigan is gigantic.
Speaking of the impact, when we first met in the early 2000s, you were the knight in shining armor. You could do no wrong. The wealthy women in this town loved Dr. Jeffrey Foreman. And then in 2006, you decide to leave. Jeff, why?
So during the time I had been at Karmanos, I had held many, many different positions. I had been the chairman of the department. I had been the director of the outpatient Wirtz Clinic. I had been the medical director of development, a role I again hold today. I had been the director of satellites and affiliates, which included setting up affiliations as far away as Turkey and Brazil. And the only role that I didn't hold, and really didn't think I was qualified to hold, was to be the director of the Cancer Center. And so an opportunity came along for me to join the largest cancer treatment delivery company in the country. 21st Century Oncology wanted me to both run their newly acquired Michigan operation, which consisted of seven centers, and also to become the national director of prostate cancer research in, you know, throughout the country, which involved hundreds of cancer treatment centers and thousands of patients being treated every single day. And it was just an interesting and different opportunity and at a time in my career where I was looking for new challenges. And it worked out very, very well until I got sick.
Speaking of which, life is what happens to us while we're planning other things. When we come back, we're going to ask them about November 15th, 2016. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. I'm Jack Krasula, and we're with Dr. Jeffrey Foreman. Doctor, take us back, November 15th, 2015.
Well, November 15th, 2015 is when I discovered that I had changed from being just a cancer doctor to also being a cancer patient, because that's when I was diagnosed with a malignant bone marrow cancer called myelofibrosis, which is a rare and without one specific treatment, fatal cancer. It turned out I was a much better cancer doctor initially than I had been a cancer patient, because I had ignored a number of symptoms that when patients would come in and tell me about their symptoms, I would be amazed that they didn't rush to the doctor. But when it was me, I took them in hand. So I lost about 20 pounds without really trying and didn't think much about it because I was kind of happy that I'd lost some weight. And I had some other symptoms that, in retrospect, I probably should have paid more attention to. But ultimately, my suspicions were really raised because my blood counts began to fall to dangerously low levels. And so I spoke with the oncologist who had been following me for a benign blood condition for many, many years, the Karmanos lymphoma and leukemia specialist, Dr. Charlie Schiffer. And Dr. Schiffer, after examining me and reviewing my lab tests, was fairly convinced that I had some type of blood malignancy, and I underwent a bone marrow biopsy, which confirmed that I had this rare cancer, myelofibrosis. So at that point, I began undergoing a series of tests and preparations because the decision really was easy. Without treatment, I had been told that in 5 years, my chances of being alive were basically zero, and by 2 years, my chances of being alive were only 50-50. And at that point, I was only 59 years old and still had a lot of living to do, and that the only curative treatment available was to have a stem cell transplant. And so I moved full speed ahead to do the transplant and to find the best doctors and do it in the best possible place. And so at that point, I met with Dr. Joe Uberti, head of the bone marrow transplant program at Karmanos, who agreed with my decision and agreed with the treatment program. And on May 3rd of 2016, I underwent a stem cell transplant. One of the silver linings to this whole story was that after I had been diagnosed with the myelofibrosis, I had a CAT scan done just to assess the size of my spleen, which was enlarged because of the disease. And they found that I had a mass in my appendix, which turned out to be an early stage cancer of the appendix, which is also a very rare cancer, but is almost never caught early. It's very similar to ovarian cancer in women, that by the time it's detected, it's usually spread throughout the abdomen and is no longer curable. So I look at my diagnosis of the bone marrow cancer as sort of being a dark cloud with a silver lining because of that diagnosis, it allowed me to be diagnosed with my appendiceal cancer early enough that I was cured with a simple operation.
And a golden lining was the blessing that you had in Miriam in the family.
Correct.
Talk about the consequences of the family when someone gets cancer.
Well, having been an oncologist at that point over 30 years, you know, I often witnessed what the spouses and children of my patients went through. But experiencing it firsthand with my own family was really quite different. And so my bone marrow transplant itself was a very smooth process. I got 5 days of chemotherapy. On the seventh day, they brought in a bag of what looked like blood, as if I was simply getting a blood transfusion. But that bag contained 7 million stem cells, which had been donated by an anonymous donor. And even at that point, it was the easiest process you could imagine. By day 10, I began to develop complications due to an infection and ended up being emergently intubated, put on a ventilator, and spent several weeks in the ICU, where each night when my wife and son would leave the hospital, they were not sure I was going to be alive when they returned in the morning. And so during those weeks and then the months of recovery afterwards, and even up until today, 3 years later, The support of my wife and children has been something that I don't think I'd be here without.
We'd be remiss if we didn't talk about the job that the nurses do with all of these cancer patients and families.
Well, the staff that is required to keep the vulnerable patients after a stem cell transplant going and healthy is really remarkable. And although the doctors come by in times of crisis or when they make rounds twice a day, the nurses are really the ones who are there at your bedside 24 hours a day. And after a stem cell transplant, although my experience was a little bit more complicated than some, but many patients don't even survive the process, so I'm grateful that I made it past that. The patients are extremely vulnerable because during the period until the donated stem cells start growing and giving you new blood cells to allow you to clot, to allow you to fight infection and have enough energy to move around, that can take up to, you know, from a week to 3 weeks. And during that time, the nurses are supporting all of your basic needs and preventing you from getting into any bad complications. So the surrounding staff, the nurses, the aides, even the people cleaning the room, because it's so critical when you have no white blood cells to fight infection that the room you're in is a sterile environment or as close to it as can be accomplished. And so every single person who's a member of the transplant team is really critical to the outcome and survival of the patients.
We're talking to Dr. Jeffrey Foreman, and since 2018, he's been the medical director of development for the Karmanos Cancer Institute. If you want to learn more, www.karmanos.org. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Krasula. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to Dr. Jeffrey Foreman. And on November 15th, 2015, he was diagnosed with myelofibrosis. Doctor, let's go back to that day. And that morning, God speaks to you and says, Jeff, you've got this very rare cancer, also cancer of the appendix. I'll give you a choice. You can either live with it, take that challenge, or magically, I'll take it away. What would you tell him?
You know, I'm glad I didn't have to make that decision at the time. And I think it would have depended a lot on whether I would have known what the outcome would have been. Because if I would have died during that period of time between the 10th day after my transplant and the 20th day after my transplant when things started to get better, I probably would have wished that I hadn't gotten the cancer. But now, 3 years down the road, where it appears that I'm probably cured of the bone marrow cancer and cured of the cancer of the appendix, I think the experience that this put me through has changed me for the better. And so I wouldn't wish it on anybody, but having gone through it and survived it, I think it's made me a better human being. It's made me a better doctor. I think it's made me a better spouse. And it's given me a better perspective on life because it's really shown me who's important and what's important in my life. And although I think I always would have said, and probably did say, that my family was the number one thing of importance, my actions spoke differently because I focused so much of my time and attention on my career and on my research and on my own patients. But now, having gone through this, there's no doubt in my mind that the top 10 things of importance to me are my family and seeing my children and grandchildren grow up. And, for example, just a couple of weeks ago, I went to a nursery school graduation for my oldest grandson, And I can assure you, I never would have gone to something as trivial as a nursery school graduation for one of my children.
Speaking of family, just in the last month or so, you and Miriam watched your oldest son, Adam, become a doctor, an oncologist. When you put your head on the pillow that night, Jeff, what'd you think?
Well, I'm so proud of Adam. I mean, actually, yesterday was the one-year anniversary of him being an attending physician as a hematology-oncology physician. And I think, in a way, it was a bit like swimming upstream because he saw what my medical career was really all about. I mean, he had a front-row seat to see me working 12 and 14 hours a day and being accessible to my patients who all had my cell phone number basically 24/7. And so he knew what he was getting into, but he also knew the positives of it. You know, that the ability to help people when they're in their most vulnerable states, to be able to give people the gift of life by curing them or to extend people's lives. And so Adam following in my footsteps and becoming an oncologist is one of the proudest things in my life.
Since 2018, you've been the medical director of development for the Karmanos Cancer Institute. What does that role entail?
The way I view my role as a medical director of development is being able to, by raising money to support research and improved clinical services, to be able to help instead of one patient at a time, as I did when I was in practice, to be able to help hundreds or thousands of patients at a time by being able to create the environment, the knowledge, and the new medical treatments that really allow patients to have better outcomes now than they did 10, 20, or 30 years ago. And so, to me, this job is simply sort of the embodiment of what I've tried to do my entire career in helping people. But it just allows me to help many more people at a time than I could before. So Karmanos takes care of about 12,000 patients a year in the state of Michigan. And through the work I do by raising money for the Karmanos Cancer Institute, the research we do, the treatments we're able to deliver to patients are the best possible. And to me, that's the goal and mission of my whole life.
If you want to learn more, www.karmanos.org. Doctor, if there's a listener tonight who's just heard those words, you have cancer, what do you say to him or her?
I just had a conversation with somebody about this yesterday, and going back to my training at Hopkins, my chairman at Hopkins told me that most of our patients will spend more time shopping for a new car than they will finding the doctor who's going to potentially cure them of their cancers. And so my advice to patients who are diagnosed with cancer is to take the time to investigate who they're going to be treated by, where they're going to be treated, and to be sure that they get the best possible treatment options and opinions before jumping forward. Although cancer seems like an emergency, most of the time it's not. And although it's frightening, the treatments are so much better now, but we rarely get a second chance, and the first option is usually the best option to be cured. And so I think patients should take that knowledge, but know that they should take the time to be sure that they're seeing the best specialists and the best experts in the field. And in some of those areas, those doctors are at Karmanos, and others, they're not. But that's what taking the time to be sure you get the best possible opinion before jumping in and getting started.
We're talking to Dr. Jeffrey Foreman, who was a noted oncologist and for the last 3 years has been a proud cancer survivor, one of 17 million cancer survivors today. You're also working with the Bernstein Clinic in Pontiac. Tell us about the Bernstein Clinic.
So the Bernstein Clinic was started by Dr. Gary Bernstein, who was a cardiologist who had a dream of having a free medical clinic. And so now it's housed in a 7,000 square foot brand new facility in Pontiac, and delivers free medical care, dental care, and pharmacy for patients who are uninsured. And unfortunately, despite all the improvements in our insurance and the Affordable Care Act, there's still a large number of patients who can't afford insurance and aren't eligible for government coverage like Medicaid. And so free clinics are still a necessary part of our society for patients to get treated, and a much better option than to go to the emergency room. So I'm doing what I can as a consultant in order to help deliver better care to these patients in Pontiac. And it's, again, an important part of what I do, and I enjoy it very much.
Final question. What have these cancer patients over the last 30-plus years, what's the biggest thing they've taught you, Dr. Forman?
I think the biggest thing that they've taught me is humility. When I finished my training and finished working at Sloan Kettering, I really felt like I knew everything about everything having to do with cancer. And I knew how to speak to patients, and I knew how to take care of them. But over the years, having taken care of more than 10,000 patients, I learned that, I have the knowledge I have and try to keep learning every day and every year, but that nobody knows everything, and that it's a humbling experience to be a doctor, and especially to be an oncologist. And I think those 30 years have made me realize that I am really doing the work that many people before me have set the groundwork for, and I do the best I can, but nobody can know everything.
Dr. Jeffrey Forman, you are a shining example of letting go and letting God. Please join us next Saturday. Until then, I'm Jack Krasula. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spall.
Believe in yourself.